No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Hey, that's right. Welcome in. It is Old School. Austin Norman and Jay Foreman with you. Brought to you, as always, by the Mercado, by Certified Piedmontese. Really appreciate them, everything they do for us here at the station and for the show. 402-464-5685 if you have any comments or questions. I'm sure we will continue to talk on the Sharon Moore firing, what it means for Michigan, what it means for the Big Ten, so on and so forth. But Jay, you might have heard, Nebraska men's basketball, 9-0 in the top 25, number 22 in the coaches poll, 23 in the AP poll, and still owners of the nation's longest winning streak. I thought Nebraska was a better team against Creighton. Did not realize they were 21 points better than Creighton. That was really the first complete 40-minute game I think Nebraska's played this year.
Yeah, I think it was the first time of in recent history, maybe in the last like 6 to 8 years, that Nebraska was coming in, you know, the odds-on favorite. They were assumed to win. They had to win. Mm-hmm. And it was a maturity game. Could they deal with all that? Because, you know, like, you know, when they went up there with like Derek Walker and them, you know, Creighton had all those guys that were NBA guys and Nebraska mm-hmm. beat them up. And then obviously last year, but in a few years in between. But this is the first one where it's like it would have been major disappointment considering how Creighton is playing and Nebraska's playing mm-hmm. that we didn't win. And they played even better. They played a complete game, and seems like they're rounding into shape.
Just in time. Big Ten play starts tonight. Nebraska hosts Wisconsin. Jay, you're really good on the whiteboard. I decided to give myself a crack at it today. So you have the play up there in front of you as well. We'll go through it on stream, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Allen Channel 961 streams up for you as well. Two different plays. So this first play is going to be Nebraska's very first possession of the game. I believe it was. So they get a stop after Creighton wins the tip. Nebraska goes down. And the setup that we have here is Bearcat Buechtengel, Sam Hoiberg up top. What I really want to highlight here, though, are the matchups. You see, I'm going to circle him. Owen Freeman is guarding Bearcat Buechtengel. Mm-hmm. And you have Jason Green on Rink Mast. Okay, that's a choice from Creighton. I think it's the right one. Rink Mast as the more perimeter-oriented guy that can shoot a little bit more, can handle a little bit more. That's why Creighton has Jason Green on him. He's a little bit more of an inside-outside guy, whereas Freeman's your kind of traditional tree. Yes, Jason Green, Miller North. That is correct. Other things to note here, you have Blake Harper circled there guarding Sam Hoiberg. Harper's supposed to be the straw that stirs a lot of Creighton's drink, so they put him on really the least threatening guy. You have Josh Dix trailing Price Sanford here, and there goes my picture. Wherever it went. Okay, we'll just move on to the next frame. Where'd all the pictures go? Oh, no. This is going to really throw a wrench into Whiteboard Wednesday if all the pictures disappear. Oh, here we go. I think we're coming back. Where are we at here? Okay. That was weird. Anyways, and then you have Nick Graves here guarding Jamarcus Lawrence. That makes a lot of sense to me, the way that Creighton lined up defensively to begin with. So it starts pretty normal for Nebraska. Sanford gives it to Buechtengel. He has a couple different options, right? He can go to the strong side corner toward where we are looking from the TV angle and push Jamarcus Lawrence up to the corner. from the corner to the wing. Or what Price Sanford can do is he can trail out to the top side of the screen to the opposite corner and post up in the corner where he's a really good shooter. Nebraska likes both of those options. So what we'll see in the next frame, yep, pictures are still here, is we see Sam Hoiberg rejecting the screen from Barry Craig, Bojic, and Joel. So instead of going over top the screen from left to right, getting into the middle, Sam Hoiberg gives a bit of a jab with his right foot. And then you have a wide open left side of the floor. Okay, that's great if Sam Hoiberg can turn the corner and get all the way to the rim. But what we see, Jay, the highlight here, look where Owen Freeman is playing. He's standing in the middle of the lane. He's standing on the Big Ten logo, and that's for a reason. Owen Freeman is not that fleet of foot. Owen Freeman needs to be positioned there to give him any chance of being a deterrent at the rim.
Yeah.
And no matter how quick Sam Hoiberg is off the dribble, that's going to be hard for him to beat Owen Freeman all the way to the rim, especially a guy like Sam Hoiberg, who has taken some steps as a self-creator offensively. But what you see from this, Jay, is not a lot of respect for Barry Bojic-Ngel on the perimeter with Owen Freeman that deep. And also trusting that, hey, if Sam Hoiberg's going to be the one to go one-on-one anywhere in this area of the floor, Creighton's going to take that as a win for them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's a super drop coverage there.
Mm-hmm. So then what we see is once Sam Hoiberg puts his head down and drives, it's pretty much exactly what I was just talking about. You see that Harper was able to recover. He got back and cut him off because Owen Freeman had to move about a step and a half. He went from the Big Ten logo to halfway right between the Big Ten logo
and the halo, right?
And the restricted arc. He's not even down there. That's Blake Harper's foot. That's all the way down there. So Harper has Hoiberg cut off, leaving him really one option because Green is still tied up with Mast. There's no angle for all, you know, 6 foot of Sam Hoiberg to pass over Josh Dix to Price Sanford, and Graves is in the passing lane there. So it leaves that easy kick out there to Barry Craig Bojic-Ngel, which we see this for Nebraska quite a bit, right? You get your guards with that, essentially a paint touch. You didn't actually get to the red, but for all intents and purposes, it's the same thing. So then as we move on, we have to realize that this is on purpose from Creighton. That's why they have Owen Freeman here in this matchup with Barry Craig Bojic-Ngel. It's why they have Jason Green starting here on Rink Mast. So then as we move on here, you see that Sam Hoiberg makes the kick out to Barry Bojic-Ngel, and that is that. Okay, first possession of the game, not a big deal. But Jay, we know Barry Bojic-Ngel is a sub-30% three-point shooter. Free throws are kind of hit and miss. I wanted to say this before the whole paternity leave thing happened. Didn't get a chance to talk about it. But teams are going to dare Nebraska to beat them like this. Teams are okay with Sam Hoiberg doing the handling, and they are okay with Barry Bojic-Ngel being this open.
Yeah.
You know, Nebraska has to figure out ways to where this becomes a positive play for them. So what could Nebraska do in this circumstance, right? Sam Hoiberg's over there. What they could do is what they did. Barry Bojic-Ngel, top of the key, shooting a three. That's what they do. Doesn't work out. What I have wondered if Nebraska was going to start to do, though, was use Barry Bojic-Ngel in kind of the Draymond Green kind of role. Draymond Green has had some seasons where he shot it well from three. Nebraska believes in Barry's ability to stretch the floor. It's just never really come true in games. So what I was hoping Nebraska would tell Barry Bojic-Ngel to do is take that pass from Sam Hoiberg and do one of two things. Number one, attack right here, draw defense. Maybe you can get Jamarcus Lawrence's guy highlighted there at essentially just posted up at the elbow in that gap. If you can get him to commit a step or two over toward you to cut off your drive, keep Owen Freeman in the middle, that should be an easy kick out for Barry Bojic-Ngel to make to a, you know, really good three-point shooter in Jamarcus Lawrence. If that's not going to happen, what needs to happen next is Barry Bojic-Ngel has to look at the rim, threaten, sure, and then go straight into a dribble handoff or a little flip to Jamarcus Lawrence. There's enough space there that if Barry takes one dribble and Lawrence takes two steps, that's already complete. But think about how dangerous Draymond Green is on the perimeter as a screener. Teams don't respect him as a shooter in the same way. And sure, he'll take some of them when they're open. Barry has to as well as a function of the offense. But the next best play is go flip it to Jamarcus Lawrence. Get it to a creator. Because at this point, you're still at about 10 seconds left on the shot clock. You have plenty of time. You don't need this one. You have time to run maybe one more action. And that's why I was pretty enthused, Jay, to see that when we get to the second half, that's pretty much exactly what Nebraska did. So this is early on in the second half. We have Bearcat Boyukdenjel with the ball again, a little bit inside the arc, right? The first one, he was very much so outside the three-point line. This time, he's moved in a few feet. But Jay, tell the people, what is Bearcat Boyukdenjel looking to do in this shot right here?
This is a high-low action right here. He's going to dump it in there, and they look like they got the mismatch. They must have got, I call it a pin down. You got Dix on Rink Mass, and that's where you got to – that's what we saw, or what I mentioned, against Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of their drive stoppers and drive extending type of action. Mm-hmm. I like it.
So
you're able to get Rink in, and then it's an easy pass. I mean, what's Bearcat 6'9"?
But it's not an easy pass.
It should be.
It could be, but if Bearcat wants to get it there, it's got to be a little bit of a rainbow because of where Rink Mass is positioned, right? He has enough space between where he could catch the ball in the rim to finish over that, but the way that pass has to go is a little more up and over. If Rink Mast is moved up essentially to being posted up where Dix's foot is, that you can see I just drove it on stream really at the first hash, that's the easy pass where it's right over top, lead him to the rim, almost the alley-oop that won the game for Nebraska against Kansas State.
Yeah.
Rink might be just a little bit too low here to make that work consistently, especially if you don't know if Bearcat has the consistent passing touch. If Rink Mast was making this pass to Bearcat Boyukdenjel, yes, Bearcat to Rink, I'm less certain. But Jay, there's another mismatch on the screen. It's the one at the top. You have Jason Green and Price Sanford. Green's a pretty good athlete, but Sanford's proven he's got some juice off the dribble. So what Bearcat does, he checks that, not there, the high-low. He says, okay, this is a mid-range jumper. That's not one that my coach wants me to take. Where is the next mismatch? It's Sanford and Green. So as we scroll through here, you see that's exactly what Boyukdenjel does. He takes a retreat dribble to the top of the key, gets out beyond it, offers it to Sanford, but kind of keeps it on the handoff. And then we get to this frame here, where I think there's a couple things that Bearcat Boyukdenjel could have done. Both would have been right. The one that would be kind of fun to do is make that kind of drop-off pass to Price Sanford, get him going downhill, because Owen Freeman is essentially at a standstill. That's not a great athlete, doesn't have great feet, and Price Sanford has a little bit of blow-by ability. Green is completely sealed off. He's not getting that pass from Boyukdenjel to Sanford. Right. Then if Sanford gets past Freeman, oh, you got options galore. Dick steps up to help, dump off to Rink Mast. You get Harper diving in. Okay, kick out to Sam Hoiberg. Or if it's Nick Graves stepping over to help, hey, guess what? There's an easy one pass to a pretty hot Jamarcus Lawrence. That's what Nebraska wanted to get. But Bearcat Boyukdenjel says, you know what? Nope, I'm going to hold on to this one. I don't want to make that pass. So instead of taking that shot there when he's open, because Green is recovering back to Sanford. You see it there in this very next frame. Green came all the way from essentially the logo. He's screaming down to catch up to Sanford. They didn't want to switch Freeman onto Sanford. That's pretty much game over. So with Freeman backed off, Boyukdenjel goes right into that second side to Sam Hoiberg. That is exactly what I think Nebraska needs more of. If teams are going to play their second big man or their less mobile big man at the free throw line or lower against Bearcat Boyukdenjel, it is so important for him not to stand still, not to take every open three that he gets. Go be useful somewhere else. You can go into this action to Sam Hoiberg. You can take a dribble up there to reset things. But Jay, this is 20 minutes of game time difference.
Yeah.
Credit Bearcat, credit Fred for making that adjustment. That's a little thing that I think can go a really long way for Nebraska in countering how teams will want to defend them.
Yeah, it's a real.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Good. I mean, it's an adjustment, in-game adjustment. You really even could have extended Burke back to the original three-point line where he was and maybe had an easier pass. But I like it because with this team, you have some heady players and you're able – I think this year one of the big things – I think Burke's in better shape, but that's why I think they know his skill set a little bit better in real time to allow him to be an effective piece on offense. And that you're, I think you're seeing really, really consistent output from Rick Mass and Sanford, and then Jamarcus Lawrence. And so then you have a piece together of complementary pieces off those two, the three-headed monster, and those three, and it's paying off tenfold. But I like this action because, you know, was it Burke 6'9", Sanford, what, 6'8"?
Yeah.
About that. And then Rank 6'10". I like that where you have three guys that can actually play on the perimeter, but then you're able to establish some inside presence when you're able to get it Rank Mass at, or Rank Mass a matchup advantage. So I like it. And
I do want to highlight the rest of the play as well, because there's more to it than this. So we have that pick and roll there with Sam Hoiberg and Bearcate Boyikengel. And I did skip a little bit here. Important to note that Bearcate Boyikengel didn't set the screen up there and then just float. He rolled. Why is that important? Because you have Rink Mast filling up, right? Rink's the better shooter. And what this does is, as well, is you get a couple smaller defenders, less athletic defenders there, and you get Dix on Rink Mast. I can see the argument either way for what Josh Dix is doing here, just kind of as an aside. Part of me thinks, okay, just stay in, right? Dare Rink Mast to beat you from outside, but also where does Rink Mast struggle when guys are up in his grill? So I kind of like Josh Dix staying attached here. But the next point to highlight is Jamarcus Lawrence in the previous frame. Let me go back really quick. Is camped out there in the corner, right? That's a good three-point shooter doing his job, providing gravity, as Fred Hoiberg would call it. Okay, so he doesn't have the ball here. And then within just a couple seconds of game time, he's still in the same spot, but he's doing something. Sanford went all the way down and filled out to the corner. What's Jamarcus Lawrence doing? Making himself a screener.
Yeah.
Jamarcus Lawrence, what, 6'3", 6'4"? Pretty decent athlete, especially for his size. Not as well built as Jason Green. He's putting his body on the line to get his teammate an open shot. He's setting this screen right here as Sanford is coming around like that. They call that a pin screen. A little bit of a weird angle here for Sam Hoiberg to make this pass, because you see that Nick Graves here can kind of get his hand in that passing lane. Hoiberg has to kind of throw this ball more out here for Sanford to go get it. But Marcus Lawrence is setting that screen, making it tough for Jason Green to get through. We see that in the next frame, where, okay, Lawrence set his screen. He's filling back out to the wing to make himself an option, but Green is in the air. He knows how good a shooter Sanford is, and Sanford leverages that, right? Because you can kind of see the bottom foot here. Let me undo that big circle. The bottom foot here for Nick Graves is planted because his responsibility now is to get back out into his gap, be one pass away, play his man, Jamarcus Lawrence. Again, Price Sanford, knowing that shot fake, Green is up in the air. What does he do? Gets low, sneaks right into that gap. We see that really well in this next frame where Green lands funky. That's the play he went down on his ankle, a little weird on.
Yeah.
Sanford's low. Okay. He's already by Green essentially, and the ball's been on the floor one time, or he might just be putting it down. Graves here in the middle, no position to help. And this is where it gets fun, Jay, because this guy's really in no position to help. He's glued here. DeMarcus Lawrence is pretty much off the table as an option. I think I have one more. It might highlight it a little better. Yeah. Okay. So we can go back and forth between these two. As Sanford drives, he's trying to get here to the rim where he ultimately ends up getting. If Freeman comes over to help, easy dump off to Rink Mast, 2 points. If Harper digs down to help, easy kick out to Sam Hoiberg, who is playing pretty well offensively, kind of feeling himself, especially there in the second half. Probably 3 points or the next right play. And if for some reason Josh Dick says, nope, Harper's got to stay attached to Hoiberg, and Freeman's got to stay attached to the closest threat at the rim, and Dick feels a need to get all the way down into the paint, well, hey, there's an easy kick out for Rink Mast, who would read that space back out to the three-point line, and boom, probably a three-pointer for Nebraska. Instead, you see Harper is so far away that with Price Sanford being as low as he was, he got here. Oh, let me circle it instead of move it around. He got here in one dribble. Harper being flat-footed, that's the other thing to highlight here and why that communication is so important between teammates. Look, Harper's just standing flat-footed staring at the play.
Yeah.
If he's in a stance, maybe he can get over there and affect the shot a little bit. Instead, it's an easy runner, and this contest that he's about to do, he's nowhere in Price Sanford's vision. Sanford is looking right up here. He's not looking at Freeman. He has no idea Harper's even coming because Harper's not a threat. I think that play highlights a lot of what Nebraska can do and just how good Price Sanford can be off the dribble, leveraging a threat of him as a shooter.
Yeah, I mean, it's plenty of options. I mean, it's positionless basketball, but you're just making the right reads. And, and that's part of what made, you know, Fred famous, you know, as far as Iowa State and obviously at times in Chicago. And now you're seeing it, you know, live in effect here down here in Lincoln. It's a pretty good, well-oiled machine. And once they get rolling and they're all on the same page, you know, they're tough to slow down or hard to slow down. And they obviously Creighton got the run in of it. And so congratulations to them, but more congrats go to the, you know, the men's basketball team.
Texter 1001, how far off is Oogie from helping at Nebraska? Still TBD. Haven't heard any concrete updates on his status. That could be a pretty important third front court piece for Nebraska to get different kind of look as well. Different player than Rink, different player than Bear K. A little more low post oriented, can play make from there. They do like his ability to stretch the floor. But that's my one thing with college coaches and college players, Jay. Every coach believes that they can get a guy to shoot 35% from three. It's always the swing skill for any team. We have a big man. If he can shoot at 35% from three, we'll be tough to guard. Yeah. If he's 30%, pretty much the whole thing falls apart. See Morgan, Andrew last year. That's a guy that was 33% for his career. Nebraska said, hey, if he can do that or just a little bit better, we can do whatever we want, even if Rink out. Well, he couldn't do that, and you see the results.
Yeah. It's tough. And I mean, you know, what you did somewhere else and what you do at the present place is always the hardest thing. And that's the, you know, that'll make you break you in the portal. And then obviously with your season. But, you know, far as these Huskers go, I mean, I like the spacing. When you look at it, you know, obviously Rink's crashing the board because Sanford's already ready to go. But
I can move back to the previous slide to show it a little bit better.
Yeah. But I mean, he knows enough that he has the advantage. He's going to the rack.
Yeah.
So obviously Dix is boxing him out. But the thing I was going to mention, you don't have to go back, is I like the spacing of the offense, right? Look at this pretty good spacing right there. Not, you know, they're not running towards each other. And that's obviously Jamarcus Lawrence already setting the screen and have enough spacing so Sanford can turn the corner.
Yeah. And he's just stepping into a shot if Sanford's going to kick.
Right. And then he's trailing him. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you get double teamed and kick out, and that's what you want. What the part of this offense that people don't understand with Fred, there's an old saying that my friend that's actually, he just stepped down as a coach at Baylor. He's the second in command at Baylor. He has a pretty big health battle that he's, you know, taking care of. But he said, look, this modern day college offense, you want to really create as many offensive rebound, offensive like chances. So, what it means, everybody's big on paint touches. Everybody's drive and kick. It's just spacing and getting in or close to the lane. And if you can't get a good shot at the rim, you're kicking it out for a wide open three. And that's what they're able to do. And that's why they're probably shooting better as a team. It's helped out guys like Brayden Frager as well. Sometimes you get Garcia and he gives you that kind of stretch four or five. Yeah. So it kind of, you know, kind of a, you know, replica of Rink Mast, obviously not the same. So you're able to kind of send in different lineups. You're not have to change your stripes too much, but it gives you flexibility because I think they're sneaky athletic in there, but they're very, very smart so that it really eliminates any athletic gap that they have or have had to face up to now.
That, my friends, is one Whiteboard Wednesday. We've got a second one coming up at 5. But first, a conversation with Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald. We'll talk some Husker football and more with Evan after this. That's right. Welcome back in. It is Old School 93.7, the ticket, and theticketfm.com. We are headed to our Allo Fiber VIP line, where we are joined by Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald. Let's bring him in now. Evan, long time no chat. How are you, my friend?
Hey, doing great, Austin. How are you?
Oh, you know the dad life. It's different, right? It's the second one for me, but adjustments. Adjustments are being made. Not even halftime adjustments. There is no halftime in parenting, Evan.
No halftime. No sick days. You sleep when the baby sleeps, and it gets more fun as you go along, for sure.
God bless my wife. God bless the in-laws and my parents and everyone who has helped out. We are eternally, eternally appreciative for them. Well, speaking of changes, plenty being made, not necessarily in that realm by Nebraska football, but still plenty going on for the Huskers in the coaching realm. Evan, let's start on the offensive side of the ball. Donovan Raiola fired after 4 years at Nebraska, 3 under Matt Rhule. What do you make of that news and then his replacement with Coach Jeep coming in from Georgia Tech?
Yeah, I mean, it all happened pretty quickly, and I think the timing of it would suggest that Nebraska had a sense of obviously who they wanted to bring in, or they probably wouldn't have made the move when they did. And, I thought Raiola certainly over 4 years had an opportunity to show what he could do with Nebraska, and there were some success stories along the way. I thought the way Gunnar Katula stepped in last year was near the top of that list. The line got better, I think, as this season went along, certainly coming off of that 9-sack disaster at Minnesota. But I don't know that there was necessarily a ton of great individual development stories that occurred in that group over 4 years. And Matt Rhule kind of said the change was more about fit and what Nebraska wants to do moving forward than it was about issues with Raiola in the past 4 years. But I think you look at Jeep Wade and kind of what he does. He's an accomplished recruiter. He's somebody who's, I think, probably views or evaluates linemen a little bit differently. So he's going to have different techniques and points of emphasis and things that go into that. And so, the lines of scrimmage were an issue for Nebraska this year in general. And this is a move that they're making to address that. I do think this move is independent of anything else going on with Dylan Raiola or anything else. I think this was strictly a move to see what they can do to help that offensive line take the next step.
Taking the next step is the biggest thing for me, because when you look at, like you said, the success story of Gunnar Katula, I'll give Donovan Raiola some credit for Justin Evans as well. Yeah. And maybe a little bit for Henry Lutovsky kicking him inside. Tip of the cap as well for the way Bryce Benhart played toward the end of his college career. But I think, Evan, even if the move makes some sense, I think that the biggest rationale is that in the Big Ten, if it's going to take 3 years to build a line, Donovan Raiola had those 4 years and really those 3 years under Matt Rhule to say, hey, here are my guys. Give us a couple years, right? Give us some patchwork guys if we need them to let the guys that we're going to recruit develop behind the scenes. And it feels to me like this should have been that breakout year for the Donovan Raiola crew. Maybe it's, three guys or four guys or shoot, maybe five all the way across the line. But felt like Nebraska was still more of a patchwork unit when we hear all the time from the best offensive line coaches and hear it from the best offensive line groups all the time. It's about the chemistry. It's about the cohesion, even on top of any physical attributes or talents.
Yeah, I think that's true. The culture piece to me was pretty strong. You often heard about guys going everywhere together. That was a group that you just saw doing life together on the field, off the field, whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think the patchwork description is probably accurate. And you look at a guy like Elijah Pritchett, who was a high priced portal addition, and he didn't start until a third of the way, halfway through the season consistently. And they had to bring in a guy like Rocco Spindler to help shore up the interior, which he did. But yeah, I mean, like, there were some recruiting wins for Nebraska on the line in the last few years, and we just haven't seen them show up yet. I mean, we've heard plenty of good things about Grant Bricks and Preston Tamua and Jason Patechak, and you can kind of go down the line. Sam Sledge with some guys that they've had recruiting success with, and it just hasn't necessarily translated to this point. So I think all that plays into it. And, you know, you've got a Nebraska offense that, to me, is still kind of trying to figure out what it wants to be about in terms of, do you want more of a mobile quarterback? Do you want more of a pro-style pure pocket passer? Because I think what that requires of the line, those are different things. And so that was kind of maybe an area where the line kind of got caught somewhere in the middle. But, you know, I guess I just think back to the preseason, and it really looked like that O-line was in great shape, where you had those portal additions and you had veterans like Evans and Lutowski, and Gatula was back out there after a good year in 24, and you had all those young guys, and it just felt like that was a position group that was in great shape moving forward. And I just don't know that it translated. And again, it wasn't probably just the line. I think it was quarterback mobility. I think it was, it's just different things. They didn't have necessarily a hammerback in short yardage situations this year. And so some of those moments where they were unable to convert in short yardage situations were probably amplified a little bit more. So I don't know that you can say it was entirely the fault of Donovan Raiola, but just when you talk about the shortcomings of a position group, and that's what this was, like that's how the business works. And, they're bringing in someone who they feel like is a better fit and someone who can bring in talent that's going to help you move guys in the Big Ten.
Move guys in the Big Ten. The thing that stands out to, I think, a lot of Husker fans when they see the Jeep Wade hire is 9 sacks across the last 2 years, which less than one a game, obviously impressive. The ACC's got plenty of talent. Georgia Tech faced plenty of good pass rushers in that league. But I do think, Evan, that's maybe a little bit necessary to add some context to, because Georgia Tech's quarterback is one of the most mobile in the country in Haynes King. I'm not saying that means Nebraska is going with TJ Lateef next year, no matter what, because of the Jeep Wade hire. Obviously, plenty remains to be seen. But I do think it's fair to note that, yeah, 9 sacks is 9 sacks, but also you had a quarterback in Haynes King who probably saved the offensive line, you know, a little bit of grief in his own ways as well.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I mean, it can be misleading because it's Haynes King, but it's also kind of that style of offense that Georgia Tech runs. So that's kind of why I'm saying, like, it part of what Nebraska has to figure out is what it wants to do offensively. And I think there were times where they wanted to be explosive this year, and either they couldn't, or they felt like maybe they needed to protect their defense a little bit more. And we saw as the year went on, like that side of the ball had trouble stopping the run and getting off the field. And so if you're, you know, on the offensive side, you're going to have to account for that a little bit. But, you know, I think they're going to have to figure out that piece of the identity. And then you still have a big room in there too. You've got, I think it's 17 guys who have eligibility after this season, not to mention the 3 guys you're bringing in the 26th class, not to mention whatever you do out of the portal. So maybe the most interesting part about this situation right now to me, Austin, is that Jeep Wade is already on hand for bowl practices, and what an opportunity for a huge room, a huge position group to make a new impression on somebody and to maybe hear something from a different voice or a different line of teaching. You know, Matt Rule's talked a lot about lately about teaching progressions and how Mike Eckler does that well. Well, you know, maybe that's something that can, come on in terms of what the offensive line does too. So I'll be just really fascinated to see coming out of the bowl, who maybe makes a move this month among some of the younger guys, what they feel like they can have unlocked. And then they get to know their new position coach too. So really interesting time. It's not always the case when you bring in a new coach that they come in and coach you right away. I think that's a luxury and something that's probably going to be helpful for Nebraska as they evaluate their situation into portal season.
We're talking with Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald. Check out his work online at omaha.com, at Evan Bland, OWH, on Twitter as well. You mentioned Nebraska in the transfer portal. Evan, I know Matt Rule won't talk about it, shouldn't talk about it, what have you. Always going to be his guys on the team. But as you look at what Nebraska could pursue, and maybe if he was up to you, what you would recommend Nebraska would pursue, would you put many resources into the offensive line or trust Coach Wade to do his thing? Or are you maybe loading up more on the defensive side of the ball to get, you know, maybe quote unquote, his guys for the new defensive coordinator and Rob Orrick?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they prioritize it because, you know, I expect them to go out and, you know, look around for a tackle probably, but they do have guys on the team. That's why I say like this next month is so interesting. You might come out of it and say, hey, you know, we feel like Grant Bricks could be that guy next year, or Preston Tamu has been working at tackle and points this year. Maybe Jeep Wade says, yeah, we can, I can work with this moving forward. Or maybe it's okay, he's still a little ways off and we need to open up the wallet. But, you know, I think probably running back's one of those spots where you're going to need a proven guy. And this will be another interesting month for the younger guys behind him at Johnson to show what they can do in that regard. But I think you probably need to bring in a workhorse, maybe a short yardage guy, somewhat like Dante Dowdell was last year, really good in those, you know, third and fourth down and two or less and in the red zone. That's probably an area. You're still going to need to go in on defensive linemen. But again, like that's another spot where I kind of look at it and say, like they have guys, they just that didn't produce this year. And I think a lot of that or some of that was because of either motivation or scheme or whatever. But like Matt Rhule's talked about moving Keona Davis from defensive tackle to a D end and seeing what that can do. I mean, Williams Winery was a 5-star prospect out of high school. Like that's somebody who I think has another level or two to unlock. Riley Van Poppel, I mean, his best play still might be that goal line stop at Illinois when he was a true freshman. Like they have guys, but it's just a matter of how do you utilize, how do you develop them? So I think overall, yeah, I mean, lines of scrimmage are going to be priorities. Nebraska for the first time feels like it is on even footing with some of the or most of the top programs in college football because of revenue sharing, because of true NIL and kind of what they're setting up. So all that is there for them to be competitive in the transfer market. But I think if it's me, I'm starting with the lines of scrimmage, running back, and then I think you got to take a look probably too at linebacker / edge rusher and see if you can further add athletic ability and production to that defensive front seven.
Talking about that defensive front seven again for a moment here, with Coach Terry Braden being fired as well, that's one that initially I was a little bit surprised by. I get it if you want to give your new DC a little bit more of a blank slate to work with, if you want to go from a 3-3-5 to a 4-2-5 or whatever it is that he has in store for Nebraska. Terry Braden didn't seem like, you know, he was the guy that elevated much on the Nebraska defensive line, but I also think it's kind of hard to fully hold that against him, a guy that got to Nebraska late after the Chiefs season ended late again last year, a guy that hadn't really been a college assistant in any meaningful way before, and a room that had lost a bunch of its best players, right? I think it was, you know, always going to be tough for Terry Braden to make an immediate impact, and he didn't. And so I get the decision to move on. I also wouldn't have been shocked if Nebraska had kept him around, given him a potentially another chance.
Yeah, I mean, I think all those things are true. From a recruiting perspective, I don't believe there was anybody that he was able to secure a commitment from in the time that he was here. And it's different, right? Like you spend 8 years in the NFL. Like you don't have to worry about those kind of relationships or that aspect of it. So, you know, it's hard to grade too harshly there, but the fact is like that it maybe wasn't his best suited for him and what he had done to that point. And kind of like I mentioned earlier, like I still feel like they had capable guys in that room that maybe just didn't live up to what they were doing. I don't know that there was anybody on that D line that I felt like got demonstratively better as the season went on. And that was an area where, you know, Braden did have some reputation with what he was doing with Chris Jones and some of the Chiefs over the course of his career there. So, you know, like Nebraska's going after Elijah Robinson right now. And like, that's a guy who not only has Rhule worked with in the past, but someone who has had some high level jobs. He's been to DC and he's got a great reputation as a recruiter. So I think someone like that, whether it's Robinson or somebody like that, I think that's kind of the mold that Nebraska is looking for moving forward. And there's just more urgency to it too. Like I think gone are the days when you can afford to give somebody in that kind of position a long runway to develop because you're in the Big Ten, and it's hard week in and week out when you can't stop people. And I thought like Nebraska's four-man pass rush was not great this year. It didn't generate a lot of havoc. And so I think the urgency that they felt certainly down the stretch with Penn State and Iowa, you've got Utah coming up in the bowl. I think that all put it front and center that they just had to maybe be a little bit more drastic in how they shore things up on that defensive front.
That's a good place to turn this conversation for the last time here, Evan. It is Utah, a team that came in with some pretty high hopes for the college football playoff, ends up, a really solid team, a factor in the Big 12 race, but pretty clearly on the outside of the college football playoff, looking in as though the Big 12 turned into that two-team race between Texas Tech and BYU, really dominated, of course, in the end by that one team. But I think if Nebraska had come into the Las Vegas Bowl in Utah's shoes, where you had the little bit of preseason expectation, you played well, you're a factor in the conference, and then, okay, maybe a team or two or three were just better than you, but you're maybe the better team going into the bowl game, feels a lot different than Nebraska kind of backing into the Las Vegas Bowl on a two-game win streak and all the turmoil and change that's already happened so far in the offseason.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in, like, motivation being a factor when you start evaluating some of these bowl games. Not always, but I do think, like, in a situation like this, you look at Utah and they go 10-2 and they're disappointed in the season that they had. And, based on what I can gather out of Salt Lake City, like that's a team that's kind of ready to turn the page. I mean, they don't know what their head coach is going to be doing next year. And Kyle Whittingham, if he's coming back or he's retiring, I think they're just kind of ready for what's next. Whereas Nebraska, it feels like there is some urgency this month to show, hey, we can stop the run. And we have these new assistant coaches here, and this is a valuable month. Let's see what we can go out and do. And I think the opt-out aspect is interesting too, where, yeah, Nebraska is going to be without Emmett Johnson, who's turning pro, and without Rocco Spindler, as he has that finger surgery to get ready for the combine. But I mean, Utah, both of their offensive tackles could be first round picks in April. So I don't know what their motivation is or what their motivation level is to play in that game necessarily. And they may have some other guys who decide, it's probably makes more sense to, turn our attention to what's next. So I think some of those things are still to play out. I mean, you do see the point spread and it's whatever it is, 15.5, which grabs your attention. But I guess I look at the game differently than I would if this were a regular season contest when both sides were full go. I think it might be a little bit more even than that, but certainly it's a game for Nebraska where that defense is going to have something to prove. And Utah's own defense isn't that great statistically. Like, they're okay, but that's a team that Nebraska's offense can move the ball on a little bit if TJ Lateef and those guys are cooking. So I think there's motivation for Nebraska to show that it can end the season on a little bit more of a positive note than what we saw in the month of November.
We'll have 3 weeks to talk about it. 3 weeks from today, it'll be Nebraska and Utah facing off in Las Vegas. Evan, thanks for hopping back on the program. Great to catch up with you. Have a good rest of your week.
Thanks, Austin. You too.
That's Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald, our guest on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Aloe Fiber is where they understand the importance of exceptional service with local heart. We'll go to break, wrap things up for hour two. Couple texts to get to on our starter Heyman Jewelers text line. And then our second Whiteboard Wednesday. That's right. Get out of your car, get to your desktop, turn your phone on, right? Get to Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter if you're at home. Aloe Channel 961, Whiteboard Wednesday, football edition, coming up at 5 with Jay Foreman. We'll go to break, wrap up hour two after this. Here, wrapping up hour two of Old School, Austin Norman and Jay Foreman with you. Big thanks to the good people at Heartland of Nebraska Windows, as well as Love Volleyball in Nebraska. Their season's just around the corner. LOVB.com to learn more. Jay, three kind of rapid fire things to get to here in this one. First of all, Amarian Jackson decommits from Iowa State, reopens his recruitment. Is that a direction Nebraska might turn?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, he's a dynamic prospect to where, he can play. He plays receiver. Obviously, I think he's the best receiver in Nebraska history by the stats. And then obviously he can play safety, probably grow into linebacker. He's only just turned 17.
Yeah,
So you're getting a bonus year. Highly competitive kid, a lot of upside. Anybody that comes out and comes at him now is going to be good. I think even think Bryson Williams opened his up, and now he's in between.
Got an offer from Purdue, I think.
Yeah, Purdue, Penn State, and Vanderbilt. Marvin Jackson had plenty, so I'm sure their phone is ringing, you know, pretty freely.
Thing number two, Sartor Hamann Jewelers text line from D-Man. If Nebraska would beat Utah, would that count as a ranked win, or does bowl season not count for some weird reason? Jay, think about it this way. Number one, I think it would count as a win against a ranked opponent. You play the game. They have a number in front of their name. You would take it. But I think that the conversation would be the exact same if Nebraska men's basketball won a game in the first four instead of in the round of 64. You know, you did it. It counts. But you're going to kind of feel like there's maybe a little bit of an asterisk by it. So just don't leave no doubt. Just go win regular season.
Yeah. But right now you got to take it anywhere you can get it.
Yeah.
Utah's still a formidable opponent. So, you know, I think you get the kudos for that.
Then finally from 8985, had to get to break. This is back on the basketball train. 8985 Texan. I feel like this is a game Nebraska absolutely has to win to show that it's turned a corner and is not going to be just another up and down season with hope and then getting kicked in the groin time after time and then hope, then hearts ripped out time and time again. Jay, do you agree? Is this game that important for this Nebraska men's basketball season?
I think it's more important just to, for your mentality check. You know, like, all right, we had a big win, get over Creighton, and then you know, validated after, you know, that and you're at home and beating a team that's, you know, that's going to come in and fight. And they always come in and give you a pretty good test, but you know, there's a pathway to it. They have to adjust to you more than you have to adjust to them. Now you just got to go out there and play.
Nebraska and Wisconsin at 8 o'clock tonight. This will be the one matchup between these two teams this year. Nebraska will only play Wisconsin here in Lincoln. So from that standpoint, yep, go get it. Pretty decent team to have at home. Mentality, I think, is the right word. Quick turnaround after Creighton. You had a week for the Blue Jays. You had really 2 days to get ready for Wisconsin, who does pose some challenges. But here's a kind of a role reversal. In this matchup tonight, Nebraska's ranked and Wisconsin's not.
Yeah.
Nebraska's favored. They're on the nation's longest winning streak. Wisconsin would like nothing more than to come into the PBA, be the ones to end that winning streak. They got the pieces to do it, but Nebraska's also got enough pieces to match up pretty well with Wisconsin and keep that winning streak rolling. Into conference play, started off on the right foot.
Yeah, I think this sets up well for Nebraska. I think they have more depth than people originally forecasted, and so they're able to play multiple ways, and they're pretty – I think they got a little bit more toughness this year, a little bit more grit. You can just see right? And so you know, I think Nebraska, obviously, would be tough, and Wisconsin's going to come in and try to, you know, obviously, you know, do the upset, but Nebraska will pull through.
Nebraska, Wisconsin at 8. I'll be there post-game coming up shortly after 10 here on The Ticket. You powered through a basketball whiteboard Wednesday. Now you get what you paid for. Jay Foreman, football version of Whiteboard Wednesday. We'll lead off Hour 3 of Old School.